Well, I don't know if you've ever had this experience before where have you ever felt like you got unnecessarily caught in the crosshairs of someone's animosity? Have you ever experienced that? You just felt like you were in the wrong place at the wrong time, and all of a sudden somebody was way more upset about something than you thought was appropriate or necessary for the moment. I had an experience like this back in 2006. The University of Notre Dame football team was a preseason ranked number 2, and they were opening the season in Atlanta at Georgia Tech. It was a big deal. College game day for ESPN was going to be there that morning. And I had a friend who worked in the athletic department for Georgia Tech. That kind of put a strain on our friendship, but we worked through it. And so I don't really enjoy supporting the athletic association for the Georgia Tech University, whatever they're called. But I thought my dad's a Notre Dame fan. I grew up a Notre Dame fan. We're going to go see Notre Dame play on Saturday night in Atlanta, Georgia, with the beautiful skyline there to enjoy just a wonderful scene. And so we're getting ready to go. And I talked to my friend. I was like, hey, can you get me tickets? He's like, yes, under one condition. I need you to volunteer and help out. We've got to provide a certain number of volunteers for the athletic association for college game day. I was like, sure, that'll be great. I'll get there early. I'll enjoy that, being a part of that scene. And I was ready to go, and I was getting ready to leave town. And I was eating at a place in downtown Athens where I was working and living at the time. And a friend of mine saw me leaving a restaurant, and he called me and said, hey, I'm heading over to such and such bar if you want to stop by and say hello for a minute. I was like, yeah, sure. I'm getting ready to go out of town in the morning, but I'll come by and say hello. So I go by over there, and I start telling him, hey, guess what I'm doing this weekend? I can't wait. I'm going to get to go volunteer and be on college game day. To which he responded, oh, that's awesome. You'll get to meet so-and-so and so-and-so. And he starts naming off all these personalities that were on ESPN College Game Day. At which point, a girl who was standing right beside him sprung around and looked at me and put her finger into the middle of my chest and said, I'll just say who she said. She said, you know Kirk Herbstreit? I said, no, but I'm going to work College Game Day this weekend and I might meet him. And then she proceeded to use some words that you will not find in those Bibles we just gave to the third graders about exactly how she felt about poor Kirk Herbstreit. Maybe he deserved it. I don't know. I'd never even met the guy. But she was adamant that he was the worst human being on earth. And she proceeded in this Athens, Georgia bar to yell at me for the next 10 minutes about how awful he was. And I just kind of sat there thinking, this is one of the weirdest experiences of my life. She knew him through a mutual friend, and she apparently did not care for him. And she wanted to make sure that I knew how awful he was and how awful I was for being associated with him, even though I never met the guy. I don't know if you've ever had an experience like that, but you just want to run and scream and hide. I turned to my friend. I was like, who is this girl you brought along? He's like, I've never met her. She just heard the name and just started yelling at you. It was strange. It was strange up until we discovered this phenomenon called social media. And things like that happen all the time, where people make an association that you have an association with, and all of a sudden, you receive the wrath of someone you don't even know. It happens all the time. And in today's landscape, we are so divided, and it's so difficult to be at peace with one another when we just yell and scream at people we don't even know because of associations that we make and things that divide us and pull us apart. And in the midst of all of that, we're just sitting here going, I'm just trying to say hello to my friend. I'm just trying to be here and get to know other people. And we find ourselves in the midst of just being at each other's throats without even knowing what we're doing. Well, there's a thing that we've been doing. We didn't get to do it in October because of the way the schedule fell, but we've been doing this thing called Second Sunday, in which we did it with our fall kickoff in August, and then again in September, we had a Second Sunday meal on Sunday night where our children and our youth ministries came together and the adults were able to come and be a part of it. And the way that we do it is everybody's all together. It's kind of one big, huge, chaotic family meal, and then we dismiss the kids and youth to go do their own thing, and the adults that are left we stick around and we do something together. And so what we did for September was we did this little experience where we walked through the story of the Good Samaritan. And as we were walking through the story of the Good Samaritan, we were talking about, you know, the tension that's in that story. If you're not familiar with the story, basically the way that it goes, it's found in the Bible in Luke chapter 10. But Jesus is giving this parable about how there was a man who was left beaten and he was left for dead, and there were a couple of religious leaders that passed by and paid no attention to the guy. And they just kept going on their way, but then a Samaritan comes along, and a Samaritan was a different race, it was a different sect, it was a different people group that the Jewish people hearing this story would not have cared for. They would not have liked the Samaritan. But the Samaritan is the one who comes along and ends up being the hero of the story that takes care of the person that's in need. And so we talked about that story and we said, all right, let's break up into our tables and let's discuss what this would look like in today's world. And so we're kind of going around, and it was no surprise to me that as people retold this story, the bad guys, the religious leaders that paid no attention to the guy laying there helpless on the road, that I was inserted in the story and multiple people's stories. This was when Matt Mullis was still here. There was one story in which I was the first guy that walked by and paid no attention to the guy in need. Then Matt was the second guy that walked by and paid no attention to the person in need. But then you know who the Good Samaritan was? Who the hero was? Kenji. Kenji was the Good Samaritan in these people's stories. Guess who was sitting at that table? Kenji. Kenji was sitting at that table, and I'm sitting here scratching my head, thinking, what in the world? Why is he the hero? Why am I the bad guy? But as we talked about it, we ended up talking about how that story brings to mind that when there are people that are different than us, people that we disagree with, they are the last ones we expect to be the heroes of the story. That was what was so shocking about the story of the Good Samaritan, was it was the person you least expected to come. And I made a comment that I just kind of bookmarked for late October, early November. And I said that I think at different points in our history, there have been racial tensions, yes. There have been social class issues, yes. But if you look at where we are most divided today, it would be in the political landscape. And it would be the person we would be shocked to come and help a person in need would be whatever side it is that we disagree with. And so the question for us is how do we live as people of God in an environment like that? How do we live as people of God in divided times? What does it look like for us to be people of Jesus when the world around us is not acting exactly the way that Jesus would? When the world around us is attacking people they don't even know just because they make an affiliation and an assumption about them. Now, here's the reality. The reality is that in about 9 days, there's going to be an election in our country, and the people in this room are not all going to vote the same. I know that to be a fact. So that's one thing. I also know that many of you feel that preachers should advocate for certain positions and certain issues, and others of you think that you should never mention it at all. I also know that some of you think that this is something that would be damaging to our witness to talk about, and others think it would be damaging to our witness to not talk about. Which brings me to this, that if anybody wants to be a pastor, I am more than happy to take a vacation for the next 9 days because it's a tough place to be. And so I have no intentions today of making any sort of pitches for a political position or a political party. What I have the intention of doing is looking at the scripture that we read a few minutes ago and saying, who does God call us to be as people of faith? What does it look like to be people who belong to Jesus and live in the way of Jesus in the midst of a world that is divided, in the midst of a world that's going to yell and scream at each other? Who is it that we are called to be? I believe it's just really a simple pattern that unfolds in this scripture. I want to invite you just to read the words that are underlined in these first two verses. Love. Love must be sincere. Hate what is evil. Cling to what is good. Be devoted to one another in love. Honor one another above yourselves. Love must be sincere. Be devoted to one another in love. If you were to read the New Testament from front to back, there is one thing that you cannot escape is a key element of the teachings of Jesus and the teachings of the church. We are supposed to be people who are committed to love. We are supposed to be people who commit to love. In fact, that was what the early Christian church was known for. They were known for being people of love. They were known for being people that broke down the walls of division and hostility. You would see people who were parts of different nationalities, different races, different social classes, working together and living together in Christian community, eating together, fellowshipping with one another in each other's homes. This did not happen outside of this crazy thing that had happened called the Church of Jesus Christ. As the Church of Jesus Christ emerged, people saw that the way that Christians lived was different than the way that the world lived. When people were divided, when people ostracized others, when there were hostilities, where there were divisions, the thing that set the Christians apart was they were the ones who got along with everybody. They were the ones who loved everyone. They were the ones that saw people in need, and they came to their care, and they came and they showed them love. When Jesus got ready to depart from this earth, he sat down for a meal with his disciples, and at that meal, he began to kind of give some final instructions. It's a beautiful section we find in John's gospel from the 13th through the 17th chapter. And in that 13th chapter, he describes how the world was going to know that his disciples belonged to him after he had departed. You know what it was? If you love one another. If you love one another, if you love one another, that's what's going to show the world that you belong to me. And this is first and foremost who we are called to be as people of God. That when people see us, there should be no question about whether we are people of love or not. That doesn't mean that we have to like everybody. That doesn't mean that we have to agree with everybody. But it does mean that the way that we engage with others should resemble the love that is found in Jesus. And how is that love described? John chapter 15, greater love has no one than this, that they lay down their lives for their friends. What does that love look like? It means helping those in need. What does that love look like? It means that we live as people of peace and people of grace, even in the midst of a world that is divided and hostile. We commit to love. A couple of verses later, Paul has, this could be a sermon in itself. This verse is so beautiful. Verse 12 says, "Be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer." Some of you hear that verse and you're like, "Lord, I've been trying, but it's been a long 4 years." Others of you said, "Lord, I've tried, but the 4 years before that were really hard." This is something that's difficult for us to live out in a world that's divided, where we don't always get our way. Maybe our preferences are not always met. But the calling of Scripture is that we would be people of hope, that we would be people who are committed to hope, to be joyful in hope, to be patient in affliction and faithful in prayer. Means that we believe that no matter what happens in our world, no matter what we experience, no matter the pain and the difficulty and the troubled times that we live through, that we believe that there is a greater hope. We believe that there is a hope that we can align our hearts with. And that means sometimes that we have to put our faith in something bigger than our earthly institutions. Our hope is in something greater than that which is in this world. We believe in the hope of the resurrection of Jesus Christ. We believe that in the way that our Bible goes, that if you were to read all the way through the Bibles that our kids were given today, you know what the end part of the Bible says? God wins. It says that we have the victory, that if we belong to Jesus, we are on the side that wins. We are on the side of victory. We are on the side of hope, and all of creation will be organized and aligned and put into the direction that God desires and hopes for each and every one of us. We do not have to live as those who have no hope. Our hope is in Jesus. And the way that we navigate divided times and the way that we endure times where maybe things are not as they ought to be is we keep our hope, we keep our faith, we are patient, we are faithful in prayer, and our belief and our trust in God. That could be a sermon right in itself. Be joyful in hope. Think about all the times that you've tried to be hoping and waiting and the experience that leaves you with. What's it like to be joyful in that? Are you always joyful or are you sometimes a little anxious? I know I'm sometimes a little anxious. But this calls us to be joyful in those moments, to be patient in affliction, to recognize even when there's difficulty, even when there's trouble, that we can be patient and hopeful, knowing that our trust and our hope is in God, and to be faithful in prayer, to keep praying, to keep surrendering, to keep believing and hoping and desiring that God's will ultimately be done, and that we can be a part of ushering that in and living into that. Joyful in hope, patient in affliction, and faithful in prayer. But then we get a few verses later, and Paul is writing to this church in Rome, and he wants them to recognize, okay, you've really got to work together. These things that I'm calling you to do, to love one another, to be people of hope, it's going to be difficult in your relationships. And so here's what I want to call you to do in the way that you engage with other people. Picking up in verse 16, it says, "Live in harmony with one another. Do not be proud, but be willing to associate with people of low position. Do not be conceited. Do not repay anyone evil for evil. Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everyone." And then I want to invite you to read this verse with me. "If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone." There are two parts that I underlined in that. As far as it depends on you. As far as it depends on you, and then to live at peace with everyone. I love that phrase, "as far as it depends on you." It does not say, when everything goes your way and everything is aligned the way you want it to be, then, you know, that's a time where you can live at peace with everyone. It does not say, if you get your way and people are on your side, then live at peace with everyone. It does not say, if everyone else cooperates and does what they are supposed to do, then you know that you can live at peace with everyone. No, what Paul says, as far as it depends on you. You have a role in this. You have a responsibility in this. And your role and responsibility is you are called to be a person of peace. You are called to be someone that lives at peace with everyone, that goes against the grain of what the society wants and the direction that the society goes, but to live at peace with everyone. As far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. We are to be people who are committed to peace, committed to peace, to being at peace with one another. And the way that we do that is by being at peace with ourselves, first of all. And then as far as it depends on me, I can't control how you're going to act. I can't control how the next person is going to act. I can't control how the girl I ran into at the bar was going to respond to me when she heard a certain name that triggered her. But I could control how I responded. I could control how I engaged. I could be at peace within myself and at peace in the way that I engage with others. So as far as it depends on you, be people of peace. Be people who are at peace with everyone. When you think about elections, I love these instructions from John Wesley. John Wesley lived back in the 1700s in Britain, and he was writing and encouraging some people who were voting in an election, and he had kind of these rules for voting, and these were the instructions that he gave those that were going to be voting in this election, and he recorded this in his journal on October the 6th, 1774, so going back a few years. And these were the three things that he said that they should follow in the way that they engaged in the election. And I think these things hold up pretty well. I think this is a pretty good way to think about how we as people of peace, people of love and hope, ought to live as we engage in political discourse today. Number one, to vote without fear or reward for the person they judge most worthy. So you vote your conscience. Whoever it is that you feel is the right person to receive your vote or the right issue to vote on, whatever it happens to be, that you vote your conscience and you vote for the one that you judge to be most worthy. Here's where it gets more tricky. Number two, to speak no evil of the person they voted against. I'll keep moving. Number three, to take care that their spirits were not sharpened against those who voted on the other side. Back in 2016, I was serving a church in Middle Georgia, and we did a prayer service on election day. And at the end of that prayer service, we had had this wonderful moment of unity where we had all circled up around the sanctuary and prayed together. And then as kind of a little bit of a charge sending people out, I read out Wesley's rules for voting. And after I listed off those three things, a guy yells from the back, "Can we get away with only doing one of the three?" And I was like, I get it. It was a serious question he was asking. He wasn't on board with number two and number three. But number two and three, as difficult as they may be, are characteristics of people who are living at peace with one another. They are characteristics of people who are doing all that they can within themselves, as much as it depends on them, to be at peace with one another. And here's the reality for us. We can't solve all the problems of the world. We can't make the world be completely at peace, but we can be at peace ourselves. We can be people who are committed to peace ourselves. We can be people who are committed to making sure that as much as it depends on us, we are going to represent Jesus and we are going to represent Jesus' love. We are going to let our witness to the world and the way that we engage with one another be characteristic of the love and the hope and the peace that is defining for people who belong to God. And so as we get ready for another round of this, something we do every 4 years as people who are a part of this American democracy, let's be people of love, hope, and peace. Let's be people who are committed to being the way of Jesus and living the way of Jesus in the ways that we engage and fellowship with one another, whether we agree with them or not. I believe wholeheartedly that we all should go vote. I believe wholeheartedly that we should pray for this election. In fact, a week from today, in the afternoon, I think it's at 4 o'clock over at the courthouse across the street from our church, there's going to be a community prayer service. I hope that you all will come and be a part of that. We're just going to pray for our nation, and another church is putting it on, and we're going to go be supportive and engage in that. But as much as it depends on us, let's live like Jesus. Let's be people who are committed to love, committed to hope, and committed to peace. Because that's what's going to show the world that we belong to God. That's going to show the world what the way of Jesus is all about. And that's going to be our witness. That's going to be our testimony that we sang of earlier for what it means to be people of God.